Hello, Treaders, and welcome back or welcome to the Tread Lightly podcast. I am co-host and running coach Laura of Laura Norris Running.
Hello, everyone. I am Coach Amanda Brooks of Run to the Finish. First, I just have to say a big thank you to everyone who's taken a couple of seconds to leave a review for the show or to share an episode with a friend. We genuinely cannot tell you how much we appreciate it. It's been great to see the show growing and getting your feedback and knowing that it's been useful and helpful to you out of something that we just thought would be fun to do.
Yes. Yeah. I've been so excited every time we have people writing in questions or sending us notes. Thank you for that. We really appreciate it. We wouldn't be here in season two without you.
Absolutely. So speaking of writing in, we had a question this week from @Kayla_Woodson. Hi, I'm looking for an opinion. Training plan for a specific time or for a specific race? Which is more effective? I've read not to do a training plan for a specific goal, but if a time goal is my goal, how else do I train for it?
That's a really good question, and I feel like a very common question with runners. And I think something at the crux of answering this is, first, is the specific goal a reasonable goal for your fitness, or is it a big leap push goal? So like a really good example is, if you're like, I want to BQ, I want to run a 3:30 marathon, is that something that your shorter distance races indicate? Is it reasonable based on other marathon times? Is it reasonable based on your training paces? Or is it going to be something where you're reaching too hard? Because if we take this training plan that's based on a specific time goal, and it's giving you training paces based on that time goal, so let's say an 8-minute marathon pace, but you can't even run a half marathon at an 8-minute pace, you are very quickly going to overreach and attempting to run those paces for those specific workouts. So like when I construct a plan, we're always training for the specific race and starting with where fitness is, because we don't want to set arbitrary goals that then lose sight of basic training principles.
100%. I would say for me, if you're picking a specific, like a race plan geared toward a specific race, usually to me, that sounds more like what I'm doing, knowing it's a revel race. So I need you to be able to handle massive amounts of downhill, or it's a trail race. So I need to understand exactly what the vertical looks like. So how much gain do we need to be planning into your week? But yeah, most of the time, I think it's figuring out what your reasonable goal is and then finding a training plan that sits within the appropriate time frame that you need. So I think we've talked about this before, but 20 weeks might be what you need if you're kind of, this is your first marathon and you're building into it, or 12 weeks might be plenty if you're keeping up a really solid, consistent base and you've run some marathons before. So I think, yeah, it depends a little on that specific goal, since we don't know exactly what it is on this one.
So hopefully that helped. I know that was kind of an ambiguous answer, but hopefully it helped that person specifically and listeners in general. And that kind of segues into our topic for today, which is how to run longer, how to build endurance.
The most common question, how can I run farther without feeling tired? And one of the most boring answers to it is consistency and time. It's just any fitness you do totally makes sense. You get better the more you do it and the longer that you've been doing it, because your body has a chance to adapt and get better at it. So there is a level of patience required with running that a lot of us don't always want to have, but is definitely necessary.
Yes. And I think that's really the important thing is, like, sure, you could like quickly ramp up your mileage, but you're not going to fully adapt to that. You're not going to feel good doing it. And you're going to struggle if you don't give yourself consistency and time to build up. And I think there's something to be said about a positive feedback cycle when you're trying to build endurance. You want runs to feel reasonably good, maybe not initially, but over time. So that way you continue to build and they continue to feel good. So many runners try to rush the process. They feel horrible doing it, and then they just give up on the goal.
One of the other things I love to point out to people is usually when you see an elite marathoner come out and have some incredible performance, like at their first marathon, they have been running for years and years and years and years before that. It's never like, oh, they started running a year ago and they came out here and had this incredible performance. It's truly, even for them with these incredible genetics, like there is consistency and time behind it to get to those big goals. So I feel like that helps a little bit, like take some pressure off. If the elites need years, like, cool, your body needs time too.
Yes. Oh, 100%. I think so often about how many years I ran for before I even attempted a marathon. And it really made the training so much smoother, I feel like, than if I had jumped in after a year or two. And obviously everyone's a little different, but you still just can't give yourself too much time to build up runs of a certain length. It's better to adapt and get to a point where you need to then increase load than to just aggressively increase load.
The next tip I have is going to make a lot of people groan because I talk about it so much, but I have data this time. So doing a warm-up before your run, there was actually a 2017 study that examined doing nothing versus doing a warm-up that included even some easy jogging and walking. And they saw that the warm-up group actually had increased VO2, they had better heart rate during their performance. And there was a study that I have not been able to find again, so I don't know what words I used to find it the first time, but it was something along these lines around walking before they started helped with endurance later in the run. And my assumption is it's because your heart rate isn't spiking at the beginning of your run. So you haven't like burned into carbs real fast, like stressed your body real fast. You've eased into the performance. And so as a result, you feel better the longer you're going.
Oh yeah, that assumption's absolutely right, because like it takes like 15, 20 minutes for oxidative metabolism to fully kick up to meet your needs. And so easing in a little bit slower produces less lactate, uses fewer carbs. It's going to give you a little bit more go at the end. And I think like to build off that, once you've properly warmed up with your dynamic stretches and your walking, still try to make that first mile your slowest of the day. I'll tell runners sometimes just roll in with a light jog. You can pick up the pace as you go, but we don't want to start so fast that you feel tired 20, 30 minutes later.
100%. I love that rule, especially when we're getting into the point where you're wanting to run longer, because we have what's called cardiac drift. So the longer you run, your heart rate is naturally going to increase. For people who have been, you know, longtime runners, when that happens is extended longer. So maybe they can go do a 20-mile run and they're not seeing it till, you know, 18 miles, maybe slight increase, but they're noticing more towards that end point. If you're newer to it, you may start to see that, you know, in mile 3 when you're trying to finally get to your first 5-mile run. So starting out easier so that you haven't already started out with your heart rate high gives you that chance for your heart rate to increase without you suddenly feeling like this effort has just gotten way beyond you.
Yes, yes, 100%. Very much agree with that. Now then, when people are like thinking about heart rate and pacing and stuff, for anyone looking to run longer, whether they're a novice or they're a little more experienced, would you recommend using heart rate, RPE, rate of perceived exertion, or a combination of both?
I kind of like a combination. So I think that just using heart rate can be frustrating when you're starting out because your heart rate is just higher. But I think it's good to like have the information, be aware of it. If you're like, whoa, my heart rate is always 160, 170, like, okay, let's maybe look at that. I don't really want you to be at 170 every single time you go running. But I think that, and you've mentioned this before, it can be like, it can almost feel like a setback to only use heart rate.
Yes, especially if you're, you know, I'd say within your first 12 months of running and you're listening to this, your like cardiovascular system is not yet adapted in a way that always facilitates running at a lower heart rate. Your stroke volume and your overall cardiac output still need to adapt to facilitate that. But like you said, I think it can help as a retrospective measure also to think, you know, I did this run and I felt pretty good. What was my heart rate? How is my heart rate changing over time? If I begin to feel like I can't keep going any further, what was my heart rate at that point? So I can calibrate and adjust for future sessions.
Yeah, I think it's a good reminder too, like you said, you should be seeing over time that if you kept your pace the same, your heart rate should be going lower. So if maybe you've been at 160, don't try to just stay at 160 because that felt okay. Instead, try to kind of say, okay, if I stay at that same effort, that same pace, is my heart rate over time getting lower so that I can do my easy runs at that lower heart rate? I think that's a really good way of being able to use it. I think one of the other things too is just giving yourself enough time at a truly easy pace. So go for the power walks. Like I can't tell you the number of people that I have convinced to like, I want you to go back and spend some time like power walking, then running, and everything feels a million times easier. And suddenly they're not at 170 all the time. So, you know, be willing to like build that base in a really smart way. Like we said, it's going to take some time. So how can we like make the most of that time?
Absolutely. And I think walking is just an overall very valuable tool when trying to build to run longer. And there's multiple ways you can use it. So run walk intervals are probably the most common way of taking short walk breaks throughout your run. And over time, like over weeks and months, gradually extending the run durations, maybe shortening the walk durations. Even for athletes who can run continuously, like say you can run for 30 minutes continuously, but it's building past then, maybe you run for 30 minutes continuously and then you use run walk to extend to the next 10 minutes to 40 minutes or something like that. Like there's different ways we can adapt this approach to work for you.
One of the things that I have some of my athletes do who are maybe a little towards the back of the pack is oftentimes to have them walk after they finish a run. So after they've had a continuous run, then we just do some walking and like maybe it's another 30 minutes if they have time because we've lowered their injury risk, but we're still getting that time on feet. So we're getting sort of, you know, all the mental benefits of how long am I going to need to be out there? We're getting increased foot strength. We're still getting a workout. We're still sort of teaching the body like, okay, I need to keep fueling because I'm out here, but it's just much less intense. So that's another way to do it on your weekday runs. Do you have 10 or 15 minutes to walk when you finish? Cool. That is going to help build your endurance over time, that additional time on feet. So don't be afraid to just spend some time doing that when you finish too.
That is such a great tip. Like it's one thing I feel like I've learned from you and I use it for a runner who's having a build up for a half marathon. And it worked so well to walk after those long runs. Like I just want listeners to know, like it really does work.
Yeah. I think we're afraid to walk for some reason, but it works. You mentioned also kind of RPE and the talk test. So the talk test, if you've never looked at that, it's sort of the idea that while you're doing an easy effort run, you should be able to speak a couple of sentences at a time. It's certainly not going to feel as comfortable as if you were sitting on the couch having a conversation, but you should be able to say a couple sentences and then feel like, okay, yep, I need a little air. Okay, I can keep talking. But if you can only say a couple of words, then your effort is a little bit too high.
Yeah, and there's actually been recent research, like a 2022 study in the International Journal of Sports Physiology and Performance that found that the talk test can be as useful of a measurement for defining training intensity as heart rate is. And what I really like about the talk test is that like it can so easily adapt. Like you can use it on roads, you can use it on trails, you can use it in summer, you can use it in winter, you can use it if your heart rate monitor battery goes out.
Yeah, I think that's super beneficial. Be like Taylor Swift, sing your songs.
Yes.
So how do you explain RPE? Because I feel like sometimes that's a little hard for people to sort of wrap their heads around.
Yeah. And I do think what makes it more complicated is the fact that there are differing RPE scales. There's the 1 to 10 scale. There's the Borg scale, which like starts at 6 or something and goes up to some arbitrary number that I can't remember. And I think it's Borg is meant to roughly correspond with heart rate. So like 15 on Borg is like supposed to be a 150 heart rate, but it does not 150 heart rate doesn't always feel the same for the same people. So a rate of perceived exertion scale for using like 1 to 10, I sometimes tell athletes to think about that in terms of percentage of max effort. So if we're talking about, you know, an easy run should be a 3 to 4 out of 10 or however you choose to calibrate it, think, you know, this is like 30 to 40% of my max effort. Sometimes you'll see some RPE scales that have like calibrations of, you know, 2 to 3 is a pace you feel like you could go all day at, as well as talking conversationally. As when you get up to maybe 7 out of 10, that's when you feel like you could only hold it for 1 hour. That can be a trickier way to think about it, though, if you are trying to run longer and running for an hour already feels quite difficult in itself.
Yeah, I like to try and give examples to it. But again, it only works if you've been running enough for them to make sense for you. So like a 10 is an all out sprint. That's 20 seconds. Like it is the max you can do for that very short amount of time. I always say 8-9 is kind of that 9 is like you're finishing a race and it's like digging deep for what you've got left in you. 7 is kind of your half marathon, like I'm working pretty hard going for a goal today kind of thing. So then, yeah, if we can back it off from there, okay, I want my easy days, like you said, can that be like a 4 and like my recovery day be like a 3? So those are the days where that talk test should really come into play. And the longer you've been running, the more you'll see variation in what those paces are. Early on, a lot of your paces might look fairly similar because you're just kind of adapting to everything. So easy and hard is not that different. So then it comes down to kind of, yeah, how does it feel? How am I breathing? But if you are kind of looking at that whole idea of like, compare each day. And if you take the time when you finish your workouts, now Garmin actually has you do it when you finish workouts. And I kind of don't like their scale because it says 4 is hard.
Yeah, it said that. I switched to Garmin recently and I was like, 4 is somewhat hard. I was like, what? Yeah. 4 is easy.
I know. So it frustrates me every time I pick 4, but I'm like, okay, but I know my scale. So if you take the time, though, to consistently rate your runs, that will just help you be better in tune with what is easy. So when we're talking about increasing your endurance, you have to be able to get yourself to stay in that 3 to 4 range when you're trying to go longer.
Yes. And I think also like having that calibration of like, if, like we said earlier, starting out slower will really help. So if you can think to yourself like, I know, you know, if it feels like a stretch at 60 minutes, no matter what, at least try to use that RPE at the start so that you feel as good as you can for as long as possible. Now, another place I think RPE can help is when we think about hills when running. Inevitably, you will encounter hills.
Hills are maybe one of the most like undervalued things we can do to improve our running. It's really easy to want to avoid hills because they are hard. But there is actually quite a bit of data around them. In fact, there was one study I love pointing to. It was in 2013. It wasn't huge, but they had runners do 6 weeks where they added hill intervals into their routine. And they saw an average of 2% improvement for all of them. And this does not surprise me at all, because I feel like that's one of the reasons both of us put hill repeats into the beginning of a lot of training plans or recommend them for runners. It's a great way to start adding a little bit of speed with less injury risk and to really and truly force your lower body to get stronger.
Yes, because I sometimes hear from runners who are working on running longer, building their endurance, that they feel like they become muscularly limited during these runs, that they experience what we call in exercise science peripheral fatigue, which is where you just feel like biomechanically overloaded, like your strength isn't there. And they're like, oh, should I lift more? And I mean, sometimes there's a place for lifting more, but when it's this sort of issue, muscle fatigue on runs, uphill running is really going to help with that, because when you run uphill, you're fighting against gravity. And so your glutes, quads, calves, et cetera, are really recruiting muscle fibers a lot to help you go up that hill. And it's going to improve your biomechanical strength while running.
Yeah, I always like to think of it, if you sort of look at someone running uphill, you'll notice they're immediately driving their knee up. So that's something not a lot of us do on our flat runs unless we're really thinking about it. So it's forcing you into a little bit of a lean, that knee drive. So it is just giving you that natural like work on your form. But yes, do these during, like, you know, add hills into your weekday. So then maybe if you want your weekend to be flat because you're trying to make that your longer run, cool. You've built up some strength in your runs during the week. So yes, I think it's super common to avoid hills. And this is just your reminder that they are going to help your endurance. So don't avoid them, even if it means walking them.
Oh, yes. A lot of times for runners who are working on like running their first marathon or just trying to build endurance, like I'll make hills, a midweek hilly run, their hard workout of the week. And they're like, where are my intervals? I'm like, we're not doing like super hard workouts yet. Your heart rate's going to get up on the hills or you're walking them, but these are going to have outsized benefits without making you feel so tired from high intensity running that then it is difficult to increase your long run distance because you're sore and tired.
Yes. And I think what you mentioned there is another sort of good reminder. As you're trying to build endurance, not every week should be harder than the previous week, just like not every run should be harder than the previous run. So oftentimes we'll kind of look at that in a cycle of like maybe you have 3 weeks where you have an interval run and you're trying to increase just slightly your weekend long run. And then we'll have a cutback week where we, you know, bring out some of that intensity. We bring back that long run. You have to give your body a chance to adapt. If you just keep pushing, you might feel like you hit a wall because your body just isn't getting a chance to sort of adapt to what you're asking of it.
Yes. And I know we've talked about this in our episode on increasing your running mileage, but like those adaptation weeks are crucial. And I think it's really important to like not put a timeline on when you want to be at the certain point. I understand sometimes that, you know, there's a marathon coming up and you have to be ready by race day. But if you're just generally looking at this, like give yourself months, not weeks.
Yeah. I think the other thing, because you mentioned strength training when we were talking a little bit about hills. So I do think strength training is a piece that a lot of us overlook when we're thinking endurance. And it's important to look at it in a couple of ways. One, we often talk about the low weight, high rep movements and say, oh, those are endurance movements. And so then runners think, okay, well, I just need to do low weight, high rep. But that's not exactly it. Like, we also want some heavy strength. We want to build some actual muscular strength, which you can do with high rep, but it requires a very high volume. So now we're looking at sort of a combo, meaning your warm-up is maybe things like the mini band where you're doing, you know, monster walks and sidewalks and all those kinds of things. That's building up some good endurance that I want in my hips for stabilizing. But then you're still doing, you know, some goblet squats or things like that where you're going a little bit heavier with weight. Anything you can do there to build up is then going to help your endurance because you'll be more efficient.
Yes. Yeah, that can help a lot, especially like if you're giving yourself time to build endurance and you can handle multiple new stimuli at once. And I think that that concept of like the amount of stimuli and training load you're handling brings us to something we've discussed a lot is like a base building phase where you really are doing most of these runs easy. Like we talk some about interval runs and hills, but if just increasing the distance is hard enough for you, let that be the primary concentration. There's no rush to get into doing an interval run or tempo run. Give yourself, like, scale back the intensity. That's going to help you feel less tired and just focus on building up the mileage before you start getting concerned about your speed.
Yep. I just can't agree with that enough, honestly. We're so excited to do like the sexy workouts. But yeah, it's just showing up and kind of doing the thing. One little variation to that might be not doing the exact same distance every day, but trying to have some days where you're going a little bit longer or a little bit less. Going that just little bit longer can literally be 5 minutes, 10 minutes initially. There's a mental piece to getting yourself to run longer. And so just even having that little variation in your week consistently, I think can really help to start being a little more comfortable with going longer.
I think that's like, I can't agree with that more. I think it helps so much. And you talking through that made me think of like two things. One, that like you said, 5 minutes extra can add up. But two, a common question I've heard from some athletes is when you're trying to run longer, is it better to try to do it by time or by distance? What would you say to that question?
I think when you're initially trying to build, I think time is really beneficial. I mean, I still hate it if my watch stops on anything that's not round. So you might go for time and then round. but honestly, like, you don't know what your pace is going to be yet, or, you know, all of those sorts of things as you're just kind of figuring this out. And it's really the time on your feet that matters regardless. So I think we've talked about that before a little bit, but I like time when this is where we're at.
Same. And I think part of it is also like, it allows like 5 minute increases to be something that stands out and still is beneficial. As I don't know, sometimes it's harder to get people to only increase by half a mile. Their psychology kicks in and they're like, well, I'd rather be at 4 full miles than 3.5. But again, like when you're trying to build, 5 minutes can be enough of a stimulus to overload.
Yes. I think that's also a good reminder that mental is part of this. So when I was first running, like, now I can go out for a couple of hours and it's like, whatever, no big deal. But initially, that sounds like such a long time. So having things that are not exactly distracting you, but making it more enjoyable work. There's a reason music works to pump people up, or listening to a podcast, or listening to an audiobook, or going with a friend. Like, don't feel like, because I've heard this lately too, of like the I run with nothing because you shouldn't listen to anything. And cool, I am so happy for them, but like, I love listening to something while I'm running. I am getting the benefits of both things. So don't be afraid to like test out those different things and figure out what kind of just mentally allows you to sort of stop thinking about the fact that this is hard.
Oh yeah, because if you have a good audiobook, it's so easy to get through that extra 5-10 minutes because you're looking forward to what happens in your book that you might not be able to listen to at other times anyway. What I also tell people in addition to that, because that is such an like that's such an important tip, is to make yourself feel as physically good as possible. So make sure you eat before. know that you can take a gel or a sports drink, even if it's quote unquote only 45 or 60 minutes. Like if that helps you, take advantage of it. Give yourself time. Like don't try to do this when you have an obligation you have to get to right away. Pick a route that is exciting to you, whether you like to explore new routes or you feel comfortable with routes you're familiar with. Just dress comfortably, like let yourself be warm. And with layers, you can shed if you warm up too much. Anything to feel good is going to create that positive feedback cycle and is going to keep you from finding reasons to quit the run early.
I feel like that's such a good note to end on. Like, remember that this is supposed to be fun. Remember to celebrate yourself. Like, I am such a huge proponent of like, you did 5 minutes more than you've ever done. Like, that's huge. Like, celebrate it. Don't put it off for like the, oh, well, I only did. It's not that big of a deal. It's a big deal. I mean, that is coming back from knee surgery. The first day I walked a 20-minute mile, I was like so excited. And then I was excited to walk a 15-minute mile. So it truly works. Like, celebrate those things. It really, really will help remind you of like why you're excited about it. Oh man, this makes me feel good. And that will keep you coming back.
Oh, yes, 100%. Celebrate it. Don't compare to others. Focus on your own journey. That's such good advice to end on. So if you have any feedback on this episode, you have questions you want us to answer, or you have requests on topics, you can find us on Instagram at @treadlightlyrunning.
And you can find us everywhere podcasts are. So make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe, and we will be back next week.
Thank you for listening.